He is the publisher of Racing Times magazine. She is the voice of NASCAR. Together, they will take you to the checkered flag. It's time for Racing Times with Alan and Robin on Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Alan and Robin.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Racing Times with Alan and Robin. I am Robin. I am the blonde. He's the bombshell. We're going to get down and dirty tonight, talking a little bit of some NASCAR, talking about Bristol, talking about modifieds, talking about Thompson Speedway. It's going to be a big show tonight. Alan, how are you?
I'm doing good, Robin. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I am so excited about this weekend. Because it's Bristol, and Bristol is one of my favorite tracks. So I'm, like, all hyped up, ready to go. Is Bristol one of your favorite tracks as well?
Bristol and Martinsville. You got to love the short track for NASCAR style.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, we did have some news this week in NASCAR, other than Jimmy Johnson winning the race last week in Texas. And that was, it looks like Kyle Busch may be ready to get back in the car, possibly in July. And, you know, there was a little bit of talk about whether or not he would be, the time that he has not been driving will be waived and he would still be able to possibly make it into the championship. I totally disagree with that. I'm sorry. If you get into a car and you get hurt, you know you're doing that as a race car driver, and it could screw up your season. So I don't think there should be a waiver, and I don't care who it is. It's not just because it's Kyle Busch. It could be any driver. What is your feelings on that? Should he still be eligible to win a championship?
I would say if he was running a sprint cup at that time and the incident happened, but he was running a whole total different series that he does not have to run. And
right.
That's my feeling. I mean, he ran a series where, you know, like he runs a truck, he runs the Xfinity series. So he runs different series. So, I mean, you're taking your chance. And I know Joe Gibbs in the past really harped on drivers doing that. And, you know, I really think that if, you know, if he doesn't make the chase, that possibly you won't see him in the trucks or Xfinity next year. You just see him straightly in the sprint cup series.
See, I'm old school. I'm like, you know, if we were doing old school, you know, type of scoring, then he would not be eligible. You know what I mean? I mean, he's already missed how many races? You know what I mean? And he would be way down in points, as I'm sure he is now. You know what I mean? And just because he won one race when he comes back, I don't think that should make him chase eligible. I don't care what you're driving. You know what I mean? You get into a car, you know you could possibly get injured. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts with me. I'm too old school, I guess. But I want to tell everybody about our guests that we have coming on tonight. We have an awesome, awesome show coming on. We've got Doug Cobies, the defending champion of 2014, the Wayland Modified Tour. Can't wait to talk to him. I know he just won the very first race at the Icebreaker at Thompson, which you were at, sir. And then we also have Xfinity and Sprint Cup driver Landon Castle from JD Motorsports, and we cannot wait to have him on as well. I can't wait to talk to him about Bristol, because I was reading some of the, you know, some quotes that he's had, and he loves Bristol. So I'm excited to talk to him about that. We had other news that came down today, and that had to do with the appeal by Richard Childress Racing and Ryan Newman in regards to the deflating tire gate thing, whatever you want to talk about. And, you know, there were some things, I believe it was modified slightly, but not a lot. The suspensions are all still staying. One thing that did bother me, and if all of you have a chance to read the verbiage in regards to how they came up to this decision, there's going to be one where you're going to be like, what? And that would be number two, where it says the panel amends the original penalty leveled by NASCAR because there is no written explanation of what constitutes a post-race inspection. So that's just a little strange to me. It's like, okay, so, you know, I mean, you should have that written down somewhere. Do you not think so? Am I the only one that's thinking that's a little strange, Alan?
I totally agree with you. I mean, I started reading the email, and when I saw how long it was, I just actually put a bookmarker in there so I can return later on to come back to it. Because it was
a little late night reading. Absolutely. It'll help you go to sleep tonight.
By the time they get to the bottom, I won't be sleeping.
Exactly. We do know that, you know, they've been taking tires from drivers every single race. And I know they've taken Kevin Harvick's tires over and over. But sorry, people, Kevin's just good. They haven't caught him doing anything wrong. He's just doing really, really well. And I don't think there's, you know, there's just no explanation. And it's almost like, and I think Doug, when we have Doug on, which is really cool because I want to show you, I want to show everybody what you brought back. You brought us back a little bit of a present regarding Doug. And so I'm going to just have you listen to this real quick.
This is Doug Colby, the defending NASCAR Wheel and Modify Tour champion, and you're listening to Racing Times with Alan and Robin on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network.
That's totally cool, and we want to thank him for doing that. Very, very cool. how was it at Thompson? Did you have a great time?
Yeah, I had a great time, you know, but it was like watching Sprint Cup racing the way Doug just dominated the race. Started on the pole, led 130 out of 150 laps. I didn't see anybody in the whole field. They started, I think it was 37 cars, not one car was able to muster enough speed to even stay with Doug during the race. It was just amazing. He dominated it. And I guarantee he made a statement last week on the Modified Tour that, you know, he's not going to go away easy as the champion. If you want to be the champion, you're going to have to beat Doug this year.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, when it comes to, you know, it reminds me of Kevin Harvick. You know what I mean? It's like he just completely is continuing on the same momentum that he had last year in NASCAR. He won the last two races in order to win that championship. So he's, you know, just doing exactly the same thing. But, you know, he's still hanging on that momentum and he's doing very, very well. So, you know, and I know people are getting a little bored with Mr. Harvick. but, you know, his average right now for this year is like 2.5 of his standings of where he would end up. I mean, that's first, second, or third. There's nothing lower than that. And I know I play a little bit of it's called a little bit of fantasy racing, and I just pick Kevin Harvick every week now because I'm guaranteed to get high points. Because I know he's going to win. He's either going to win coming second or third, one or the other. But we'll see with Bristol, though. I mean, Bristol could bring a big, I don't know. Bristol, I love Bristol so much because people get angry and they get mad and the tempers flare. And we get to get a bit of that old school NASCAR back. You know, who knows what's going to happen? You know, who's going to get into who? I think if Michael Waltrip were racing, I think Denny Hamlin would go after him because I think he blames that taco that Michael Waltrip dropped on his car for what happened to him at Texas last week.
I missed that part. Actually, I got up to Doosan, I came back, and there was a taco sitting on Denny Hamlin's car, and I couldn't even figure out where it came from. Then I saw it was Michael Waltrip involved, so I kind of put two and two together. But
right.
I totally. I mean, who else would taco the driver?
I don't know. And apparently there's something that I missed about it. I think Michael did an apology of some kind, but I just thought it was very amusing. Very, very amusing. Well, speaking of, you know, champions, we're going to talk to Mr. Doug Colby. He is on the line right now, our defending champion from 2014, Whelen Modified Champ. Doug Colby, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Oh, thanks, you're very, very welcome. I was just telling Alan that you're basically doing the exact same thing that Kevin Harvick is doing. You're just carrying on the momentum from last year and bringing it to this year by winning the icebreaker at Thompson.
Yeah, I guess I never thought of it that way. And certainly if we can do anything that Kevin Harvick's doing, that's a good thing. We you know, started off with a great run last week and Obviously, starting off our title defense really strong with our number two Dunleavy's Truck and Trailer Repair car, and we're ready to go to Stafford in a couple weeks here for race number two.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, when you're and you dominated, you literally dominated. You led 130 out of 150 laps. But when you are dominating that much, the fans sometimes get bored with it, whatever. You know, I love racing. I could watch you do 130 laps all day, and I'd be fine with it. You know, but I mean, is there a part where you're constantly just waiting for, especially when you're getting down to the last 20 laps after you've led so many? Are you thinking, is anything going to break? Is somebody going to bump me? Is my car going to blow up? Is that going through your head the last 20 laps?
Yeah. I think that goes through any driver's head who leads pretty much the entire race in any division. And, you know, for me, what I'm just hoping doesn't happen is, a caution come out with two to go or something like that, and then we all have to have another restart and people get crazy, and then that's when cars get wrecked. So I like it when, you know, the last 15, 20 laps of the race go green to the end, no matter whether I'm leading or whether I'm in, you know, fourth or fifth. They're really, you know, the end of race cautions are really what I worry about. And then, yeah, of course, you worry about, you know, is something going to break or something on the last lap. But as soon as we cross the white flag in our series, if the caution comes out, actually like it did this past week, that ends the race right there. So that's, you know, you take the white flag, you know, you got it done. And, you know, the domination, I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, I've never had a weekend like that before where I've won practice, the pole, and then led all the laps in the race and then won the thing.
Wow.
So, I've been racing for 30 years now, and I don't think I've ever had that happen in any level I was at. So just a great weekend for our team, and, you know, we're really pumped up and excited for this season.
Go ahead, Alan. I have a question for him because he mentioned how many years you've been driving. So you go, Alan, and then I've got another question.
So being that dominant during the race and, you know, coming off a championship season, and now Stafford's coming up with the Spring Sizzler, you know, the greatest race in spring, how much pressure is that going to put onto you as, you know, being that dominant at Thompson, moving to Stafford? Is that going to be, like, you know, an easy task for you? I mean, you were really fast. You just dominated every aspect of the weekend. Now, what is your plans coming into the Sizzler?
Well, I don't think there's any pressure. There's really no pressure ever for me coming to Stafford. It's my home track, and I have more laps around this facility, which I'm actually just driving out of as we speak because we just tested today. I've got more laps here than any track that we race on. So our team is very aware that we could dominate a race like Thompson and then come to Stafford and finish, you know, 15th or something like that. And especially Stafford's a unique place for the modifieds because the top 17 or 20 cars are separated by, you know, a tenth and a half or something like that. It's ridiculous. So I think if we can just come here in 2 weeks and give ourselves a good race car and focus on having a good car, a car that races well, I think that's the most important thing. You know, the Sizzler's 200 laps for us, the longest race of the season, and you really have to have a car that can settle into a long run and keep the lap times going and not fall off too far. So that's what our focus is. And to go back to your question, the pressure, you know, defending champ and then coming in and winning the icebreaker, it doesn't make any more pressure for our team, I think, to come to Stafford. We treat each race separately and really hope to just, you know, win every race. So whether we win the Sizzler or not, I mean, it really has no – the way that we perform at Thompson has no effect on that.
I have to ask you, you're 30 years racing. You don't even look that old to be racing. So how old were you when you started racing?
Yeah.
You don't look that old. Did you start when you were three?
I started when I was six. I'm going to turn 36 this year, so it's been 30 years. I started in quarter midgets at Silver City Quarter Midget Club in Meriden, Connecticut, and Little T Speedway up at Thompson. So I literally grew up watching, you know, the races at Thompson from up on the clubhouse hill. And, you know, I don't want to say it was a dream to race there, but it was always just something that I always thought when I was a kid it would be really cool to go race at Thompson. And now, you know, to have won two tour races there now, it's a really cool thing. I mean, the modified tour in New England is, you know, what all young drivers kind of aspire to get into if you're going to run a modified. It's to be in a tour car and a competitive tour car and running tracks like Thompson and Stafford and Waterford and Loudon. I mean, that's what we all aspire to do. So it's really fun to be having, you know, to be doing this with my family for as long as I have, and all the friends that I have through racing over the years. It's a great time now to be an adult and doing this on the big track.
Doug,
I love the fact that you brought up New England, because there's a lot of people down south who just totally forget that there's another part of the country where drivers actually come from and actually race up in New England. And with Alan and I'm from Boston, Alan's from Connecticut. And so I want to ask you, and then we'll go to Alan, what do you think about the track at Loudon? And please be honest.
Well, I mean, Loudon is probably I don't want to say it's my most favorite track to race on, because I have about three or four that I kind of think of equally for different reasons, but I get excited to go to Loudon any chance I can. I mean, it's just a very unique experience with the bump drafting that the modifieds do because of the restrictor plates that we run. And it's just such a fast track for us. And I know for the Cup Series, it's a challenging track for them because it's so flat and those cars don't really like to go around, you know, flat, short tracks for them. But it's our biggest track that we race on, and it's a super speedway for us. So we use up that whole racetrack top to bottom, and, you know, it's quite a show that the modifieds put on. I've been fortunate enough to win two modified races up there in the past few years, and then also came close a couple of other times. And I've also been a fan up there and watched the modifieds when I didn't have a full-time ride and didn't have a ride at Loudon. And it's just such a great show and a great part of the weekend up there for the New England race fans to go see the Cup Series and modified race.
Alan?
Doug, I have a question for you. You brought up Loudon. You said, you know, you won at Loudon, you won at Thompson, you won at other tracks. Is there any one race that sticks in your head as, you know, your biggest race win in your career?
Oh, that's a tough one. I've been very lucky to have won some big races. I mean, I think the first win at the Sizzler in 06, it was a special race. Jackaroo Sr. had just passed away, and, of course, he was the patriarch of Stafford Speedway, and to win the first Sizzler after his passing was a special thing for me, especially with that being my first career tour win. And then I think maybe the first win at Loudon. It's like Loudon's the Super Bowl for us, and, you know, you never forget your first win on a cup-type track where there's, you know, cup guys watching and there's race fans there from all over the country that are seeing your race, and that was a really cool thing. I mean, I've just been really fortunate the past few years. I got a win at Daytona, and I know it's the Daytona short track, but it's still a Daytona trophy, and, a bunch of other cool races just in terms of the modifieds, you know, the big money show at Thompson that we ran a couple of years ago that paid a lot of money for the tour modifieds. That was a cool one to win. So I'm lucky, I admit it. I mean, just very fortunate the past 4 or 5 years to have, you know, great equipment and great teams and smart crew chiefs and of course, you know, great sponsors keeping us going from week to week. And, you know, I put in my time and paid my dues when I didn't have full-time ride. And I think a lot of people, you know, recognize that I, you know, I'm not a kid that came with a silver spoon in his mouth. I mean, it took me a long time to establish myself on the tour and to get a full-time ride, and I feel like I've earned it. And, you know, that's why I just kind of ride the wave now, have a good time with it, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, that seems to be the kind of like the going theme that's happening, you know, in the lower echelons of NASCAR. There's a lot of kids that are, you know, who are out there that are getting rides, and they're not paying their dues. You know, what do you think about that?
I mean, obviously I'm a little bit jaded because I come from one end of the spectrum. I mean, I can't blame anybody for who wants to be a race car driver if they have the means to go ahead and do that, whether it be sponsorship money or family money. I mean, I would certainly never fault anybody for doing that. You know, all I can say is that there are very many drivers out there who have been racing, you know, as long as I have, you know, started when they were kids and, you know, really ground out and drove all sorts of different types of cars and struggled in inferior equipment and learned how to make it work. And there's a certain, that breeds a certain type of driver as you mature into the adult driver that you become. And I think that those drivers are the ones that ultimately understand, you know, racing a whole lot better. And you know, like I said, I would never fault anybody for how they get into the sport or how far they go into the sport. And you got to make things happen. And some of us haven't been able to make things happen the way maybe we would like to. But, you know, for me, I'm very happy with where my career has gone. I think in terms of racing in New England, it's a special thing to run on, you know, the Modified Tour, and to be a champion on the Modified Tour is awesome. So I'm really happy for that. And hopefully things keep rolling forward here.
And, Doug, the qualifying, you know how NASCAR does the qualifying, the group qualifying. You guys still do the single file qualifying, you know, single car. Would you like to do the group qualifying like NASCAR does?
Absolutely not. I mean, I grew up time trialing when I was a little kid.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that.
I don't necessarily think that, you know, fans don't go to see qualifying, you know. There's been battles in the Northeast over whether we should run time trials or heat races, and everybody says that the fans want to see heat races. The only problem is the fans don't show up to see heat races, and all heat races
right.
do are either wreck race cars, put more laps on the equipment than is necessary, or if it's a boring heat race, people just ride around half throttle. So to me, I like the two laps that we do. I grew up time trialing in quarter midgets. It was always an exciting thing as a driver for me and my team to try to best all the other teams in that two-lap run. And I certainly hope we never go to group qualifying in the modifieds. The only thing that I'd like to see us follow the Cup Series with is, well, what they used to do is have the slower cars qualify first and have the faster cars from practice qualify at the end. I would like to see us switch to that. That's probably the only change I would make.
Okay.
Alan, I'm sorry. Are you there? I'm sorry, Alan. You're like going in and out, so I don't know if you're there. And I'm very, very sorry. We're having technical difficulties with Blog Talk Radio, which seems to happen only two or three times a year. It had decided to roar its head tonight. But Doug, have you ever raced at Bristol or not?
Yes, I actually missed the first couple of Bristol shows with the modifieds, and then I raced there. I think the last. 3 years, I want to say, three or four years. We finished fourth last year, so we had a good car, and I thought we had a winning car last year. We just didn't get the lucky breaks that we needed, and I think we'll go back this year with something even better, and that's just a beast in itself. That racetrack is so fun, and in a modified especially, I mean, we're barely lifting off the throttle there. In fact, on new tires, you can just about hit full throttle all the way around the track, and it certainly reminds me of my days in a quarter midget when that's kind of the norm of running one of those little cars. But yeah, what a wild ride that is in a modified. And I'm sure a lot of people would love to experience that. And again, we're really lucky as drivers to be able to, you know, not only get to drive Bristol, but to get to drive it in a modified is just the icing on the cake.
I don't think people realize how much the banking is on Bristol until you actually go there and have to walk down the track and you're like,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
The two things to watch are, it's funny to watch the haulers go out onto the track there and see what they have to go through to get just out onto the infield. And then a couple of years in a row here, we've had a few red flags in the modified race. And we stopped right in the middle of turns 3 and 4 last year, and you're literally just hanging on your side like you're, you know, on an amusement park ride, strapped into your seat and just, you know, rest your head on the headrest because it's so steep. But it's funny, when you're actually racing, though, you don't realize how much banking there is. It's only when you're standing on it or you know, stopped on it.
Doug, you run an LFR chassis, right?
That's correct. That's new this year.
Did you get it towards the end of last year, or was that just a fresh chassis? Because I talked to some Southern drivers and some other drivers, and it seems like the LFR chassis have been, like, up in front. Burt Meyers, 5 wins. Jason Myers running in the top, you dominating the race. Is it something about the chassis that's doing that, or do you think you guys just found it?
Well, it's a combination of everything. For us, we did not run the chassis at all last year. I think we had got it in the shop, a bare chassis, sometime towards the end of the season or right after. It was actually towards the end of the season last year, but we just put it together for this year when we went down to the Caraway race for the Southern Modified Tour opener. And, of course, we paid close attention to how Bert and Jason did with it in the races that they've done. And it seems like It seems like it's given guys a little bit more than what they had before. And, you know, I would say for us, I would agree with that, because I think at Thompson, Thompson proved to us that we had a little bit better of a package than we had last year, where I think we were maybe a second to seventh place car at Thompson last year, and certainly we, you know, upped that this year. So the LFR chassis is a new piece, and it's going to be different on every track that we race. You know, it might be dominant at Thompson, but it might struggle at Stafford, or it might struggle at Riverhead, and all of those races are equally as important. So it's just, you know, with such a short schedule that we have only 15 races on our series, if you screw up one of them, you kind of put yourself in a little bit of a hole. So we're really focusing race to race to build a notebook and trying to test as much as possible and try to take whatever we can learn from one track and bring it to another, because that's really all you can do with a new chassis program is try to work everything out of it, all the little bugs, and figure out what it wants and keep feeding it that once you find it.
Doug, what we're finding when every weekend, we're seeing the Sprint Cup drivers, the Xfinity drivers, and we're seeing stands are not sold out, and some of them are like drastically empty. But are you seeing the same trend I'm seeing, and that is more and more fans are going to their local tracks, like a Thompson or a Stafford or a Bowman Gray?
Well, I know some of the local tracks are still struggling too, and ultimately, you know, a lot of that has to do with marketing the product. I mean, you know, a lot of these short tracks are not getting their word out there that they're even existing in some of these
right.
states and towns or whatever. But, you know, our short tracks up here seem to be doing pretty well. Maybe the car or the track owners might disagree with me if I said that, but it seems like they have, you know, solid crowds at Thompson, Stafford, and Waterford in, here in Connecticut every week. And that could have to do with the economy, you know, that might do with the economy in the Northeast being, you know, maybe a little stronger than certain parts of the country. But the cup model is a little bit flawed, I think, right now for today's fans. I think the races
right.
are too long, and, you know, obviously it's expensive for a family to go to the races. So a lot of them, I think, are turning back to the short tracks and want to see, you know, shorter shows with more aggressive moves and, you know, just to keep everything rolling along. And I think the challenge for the short tracks is to keep their program, you know, short and sweet and make it so that the fans can get home at a reasonable hour and feel like they spent their money wisely. But, you know, the Cup Series, I don't have an answer for that. I mean, I think a lot of the tracks are very similar. I think a lot of the, obviously the format is the same everywhere you go. The race distance is the same. And I think, you know, a lot of people are kind of gravitating towards the road courses and bringing the truck series to Eldora and putting them on dirt.
Right.
I mean, that's ultimately what's drawing fans out these days. And that's because you have to be creative with your product and continue to make it better and keep people interested, because you keep bringing the same thing to the track every week. You know, people aren't going to feel like they missed something if they don't go. And that's, you know, you have to make people want to be there and feel like they're missing something. And some of the short tracks up here are doing a great job with special shows that pay big dollars and bringing in different touring series and changing up, you know, running twin features for their feature division certain nights. I think those are the types of things that are drawing people in. And then, of course, Bowman Gray Stadium is a beast in itself with the people they're able to bring in there for what everybody would agree is really not that great racing. You know, that's the racetrack that doesn't allow for side-by-side racing, yet it sells out and has the biggest fan count of any track in the country for a weekly series. So they're doing something right. And, you know, I think everybody needs to find out what works in their market and keep doing it, you know.
Doug, you brought up road course. You guys used to run at Watkins Glen. You ran at Lime Rock. Do you want to see a road course race back in the schedule?
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody on our tour wants to have a road course race back on the schedule, because everybody spent a lot of money on transmissions and suspension equipment just so that we could go to Lime Rock for the first time. And now that it's not on the schedule, everybody has this equipment that they can't use. So a lot of people have been talking about the South Jersey road course maybe joining our schedule, and that never happened. But I certainly think you will see a modified tour race scheduled at the Thompson Road Course, hopefully as early as next season. I think that's something that they should experiment with, and maybe if they do that, we'll get Lime Rock back on the series and hopefully run the two road courses back to back so that people can leave their setups in there and not have to convert over, you know, in the beginning of the season and the end of the season if they separated the races.
I agree.
I just want to say thank you so much for coming on today. We've got just a few more minutes until our next guest comes on. I have to ask you this real quick because I know you're from New England, but are you a New England Patriots fan?
I am a big New England Patriots fan.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, good. Then you're good with me. You're good with me. You can come on the show anytime you want.
But I am. I'm also a New York Rangers fan, so I'm down in the New York.
Okay,
I'm
whatever.
From Connecticut, so we split between New England and New York. You know what I mean? Boston,
I know. I know. Ellen's a Yankee fan. I'm a Red Sox fan. But, you know, today's Tom Brady's 15th anniversary of getting drafted 199th. So I had to ask you the Patriots question. But we want to wish you all the luck next week and for the upcoming season. We hope to have you back on. Thank you very, very much for coming on.
No problem. Thanks, Robin. Thanks, Alan, for having me, and hopefully I can talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. That was Doug Coby, the defending champion of the 2014 Whelen National Modified Series. He looks like he's basically just going to be doing everything that he did last year. Alan, we're going to go to a quick commercial, and we will be right back.
You live it, breathe it, dream about it. You poured your blood, sweat, and tears into it. And this year, victory is yours. Because you've got FantasySportsWarehouse.com is your secret weapon. Fantasy Sports Warehouse is your one-stop shop for fantasy sports products, blogs, and the latest info. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com to get info to help you dominate the fantasy sports season wherever you go.
And we want to thank Fantasy Sports Warehouse for allowing us to have our show on their network, and we also want to let people know if you go on DFSWarehouse.com, you will be able to be a part of our daily fantasy that is happening right now. I've been with this company for 2 years. It's finally happened this week. We had our launch. So excited about it. So if you're a daily fantasy person, that is the place to go, DFSWarehouse.com. All right, pretty soon we're going to have the one Mr. Landon Castle. I have got the first question I want to ask him, Alan, this kid started driving when he was three. 3 years old. Does that not blow you away? That just, like, three.
And what did Doug say? He started when he was five. And you know.
Yeah. No, he was six. He was six. But I have a grandson who's three. He's going to be three on the 30th of April. And I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, there is no way that he would be able to drive a race car. I mean, I don't know how he did that. So I'm really curious to see how he would do that at 3 years old. That just blows my mind.
I go to a lot of the Sprint Cup races. And I do come across Lando a lot. And, you know, he runs the Xfinity Series full-time. He runs the Sprint Cup Series full-time. The kid, you know,
right.
He works hard. He goes out and he busts his butt. He comes up with sponsors. He does everything, you know, that a driver does as a race car driver, plus, you know, the media
right.
side, everything. And this kid is busy. And, you know, he's one of those drivers that you admire, that you look at.
Exactly.
And, you know, he might be a top driver that everybody follows, but he's a driver that everybody admires for what he does to get himself to the track every week.
Well, it's funny because ever since we announced that we were going to have Landon on, I've had so many people say to me, oh, my God, I love him. You know what I mean? He has a lot of fans, and a lot of people are so excited that he's going to be on tonight. They're so excited they're going to be able to hear from him. And, you know, I totally 100% agree. He does not have that standoff personality at all. He's like a good old boy, you know what I mean? Like, there's absolutely, you know, nothing. Like, what can't you not like about Landon Castle?
I followed him. I know Ron DeVine for BK Racing really good. He's a real good friend of mine at the track. I always go and see him. And Landon drove for him. And, Lando is very approachable, loves talk racing. He loves to talk about, like, his sponsors, what he's doing, upcoming races. And I like to hear from him about this coming weekend, you know, coming up at Bristol. It's always a fun
right.
track for the fans right. to see what Landon's got to say about driving Bristol as a driver.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he has a nickname called Automatic. So I want, and I know why he's called that, but I want him to tell the our guests out there, our fans out there, as to what Automatic means. Why is he called that? But yeah, I'm still stuck on the 3-year-old driver. I'm still stuck on that. I think maybe as a mom and now a grandma of a 3-year-old, it just blows my mind. Oh, speaking of, we want to welcome none other from JD Motorsports, Mr. Landon Castle. We want to welcome you to the show, Landon. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I have to ask you right off the bat, Landon, how in the world were you driving a car at 3 years old?
Well, I started out on 4-wheelers and even actually electric 4-wheelers. Just kind of worked my way up from there.
That just blows my mind. I have a 3-year-old grandson, and I'm lucky if I can get the kid on a big wheel. It just blows my mind that you started at three years old. But let's fast forward. You're going to Bristol this weekend. What do you like most about Bristol?
So we're I'm actually headed to Bristol right now. It's kind of raining, and I'm just leaving Charlotte. But I love Bristol because it's such a fast racetrack for how small it is, and you really got to be on top of your game there and have good mental focus pretty much every single lap. So it's definitely one of the most physically demanding racetracks, and it's just one heck of a show. So it always gives me goosebumps to go to Bristol.
And Landon, with Bristol, which race do you enjoy the most, the day race or the night race?
I don't know. I mean, they both have their certain attributes. I mean, night races are always fun. Day races are fun because the weather, usually makes, when it's warmer out in the daytime, it usually makes the track slicker, makes it a little bit more of a driver feel. So, I don't know. The concrete surface at Bristol is so consistent that it doesn't make too big of a difference anymore. But I could go either way.
I have to ask you, this is the first year that, there's all these cameras on pit road. And, you go, you make your pit, you get out there, and then all of a sudden you're told, you got to come on back, you got a penalty. Is that driving you crazy as a driver as much as it's causing the fans crazy? We're going nuts watching it, because we see our guys out there, they come out third or they come out second or they come out fifth or whatever. They up themselves 5 spots and then they get to come do that wraparound. I mean, is it driving you nuts?
I haven't had a major bust on it quite yet. So we've had a couple penalties this year, but nothing that's really been enforced by the pro system, like driving through too many pit stalls. But I think it's a good thing, even though it seems frustrating at first. I like it because it's black and white. I mean, it catches every single infraction, and you got to serve the penalty. And the greatest thing about it is that it just shows that we're, as a sport, NASCAR is on the cutting edge of technology, and that we're able to provide to our fans more data and more things to kind of dive into in terms of how a race plays out, and helps the fans understand why certain things are happening in the race. So I could see as a fan where it would be frustrating previously to watch your driver have a good pit stop, come out of the pits, and then have to line up in the back and not really know why. So it's cool now that the fans can actually see a replay. They have access to what happened and see the video on pit road and why their driver has to go to the back.
Yeah, I guess you could say it does help in that case, because in the debris, when there's debris cautions and you can see the camera running around trying to find out what it is, that helps us too.
There tends to be a lot
of debris cautions towards the end of every race these days.
Yeah, that's one that maybe they need to have a black and white rule on too.
So I want to ask you, because we were talking about this earlier, Kevin Harvick seems to be just dominating. How, now, it's okay, you don't know, we're not going to tell on you or anything, but how much are you and some of the other drivers just want to win one fat, you know, have him come in second and you blast by him so bad? I mean, is that like the repeating theme that all of you have with Harvick?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would love to, at this point, I'd just love to come close to Kevin Harvick. That team has just had a ton of speed, and Kevin as a driver has just seemed so focused right now, and he's even more poised, I feel like, than he has been in the past, because he's shown a lot of, mental struggles in the past and things like that. And it's shown that it's easy for him to get down on his pit crew, but it seems like right now he's got so much confidence in his team, and his team's got so much confidence in him that it's actually helped his mental strength as well, which is only going to make him stronger.
I think it was Keelan. I think having Keelan just totally changed him, you know, because he turned into a dad, you know what I mean? And it just sort of, I think that changed him. But back to you. I want to know, can you tell everybody why you have the nickname Automatic?
I don't get called Automatic too often, but I mean, I kind of got that nickname when I was new into the Cup Series, and I had to qualify in for races for teams that weren't locked into the show, and it just seemed like every single week it came down to one lap and one qualifying lap, and all the pressure was on either making the race or not making the race, and we always made the race. And so some of the guys kind of in our group were like, man, that's, you know, he's automatic. He just can't, you can always count on it. So it's hard to, you know, describe that about yourself, but it's kind of a nice nickname to have, I guess.
I would own it. Own it, Lennon. Go. Alan?
Landon, are you, a favorite with the qualifying procedures that you're going through with NASCAR? Do you like this, or do you like the single qualifying that they used to have?
I like the single car qualifying, but I think that's because it catered into my ability to kind of lay down one lap, perform under pressure. I think that the group qualifying and knockout qualifying is good for the sport. I think the fans like it. It shows some excitement. But the other thing it does is it kind of gives teams that just flat out have a faster car, it gives them an opportunity to overcome a mistake they made early in the qualifying session. So it's made it a lot harder for guys to make up for a car that may not be having a good day, you know, and just let it hang out there and lay down a lap of qualifying and kind of wow the crowd. But I think in terms of a production and putting on the show, it's exciting, and, you know, wondering who's going to make the next round and who's going to get bumped. I think that's good for the sport, and so it's just a good evolution of the sport.
Now, Lynn, a lot of people have been saying that the Xfinity cars and the sprint cars are a lot alike this year, and you drive in both. Do you agree with that?
They're similar. I mean, there's a few differences that really stand out. You know, like the Xfinity cars are more skewed out. They're I feel like you use the right side of the car more for aerodynamics. The Sprint Cup cars have more adjustability. You know, you've got bump stops. You don't have ride height rules. You can run a ton of different streams. So there's still some differences, but they certainly drive more similar than they have in the past few years.
Alan?
Yeah, Landon, let's go back to qualifying real quick. The TV exposure is really big for, like, sponsors. Sponsors are looking for the exposure. Do you think the way to qualifying now is taking away the TV exposure for, like, the lower funded teams that are trying to use TV as a marketing for them?
I think if you're really nitpicking at it, you could probably say that. But we haven't really felt like we've had any sponsors that have said, well, you know, we're just, I think we're going to have to back out because we don't get to do on qualifying day. you know, I think it. I think that with the power of social media right now and the power of NASCAR's following in social media, we definitely direct a lot of conversation that way, especially for a small team that that may not get as much TV time as a top 15 or top 10 team. So we kind of structure our pitches as the value of branding with a race car and having that branding at the racetrack where there's 100,000 people in the stands and even, you know, more in the infield. And our branding on social media with, you know, nearly 50,000 Twitter followers, things like that. And then the added bonus is, you know, there's millions of people watching on TV. So, you know, we don't really, you know, the qualifying thing is, yeah, I mean, it's a conversation, but I don't think anybody's really nitpicked it so hard that it's affected our sponsorship.
Alan?
Yeah, go ahead, Robin.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought you were going to follow up on that. Landon, so you were going to Bristol, but out of all the tracks that you have raced, which one is your favorite?
I try not to pick favorites. I don't know. I like them all. I like wherever I'm at. I hate to, for racing karma, be driving to Bristol and tell you that Martinsville is my favorite. I need to run well at Bristol this weekend.
Oh.
So.
Do you have any superstitions that you do before you get in the car or before you start the engine?
No, I'm not terribly superstitious. I might be a little bit stitious. That was a Michael Scott Office quote. I don't know if you watch The Office.
I guess I used to watch The Office.
I've been binge watching The Office on Netflix. So.
Oh my goodness!
I'm not terribly superstitious. It's you know, it's more just routine. I just like to keep a routine and keep a healthy habit on the road and on the weekend on race day because I think that, you know, has a lot to do with just, you know, training your mind and body for the high level of competition that we do. And those are the kinds of things that I'm really into, is just, you know, keeping my mind and my body sharp.
Exactly. Well, I have to tell you, if you love The Office, okay, you have to look up on YouTube the limp sync battle between John Krasinski that he does. So that's something that you can do while you're driving to Bristol. You will absolutely love it. I've been looking at these YouTube videos of lip sync battles all weekend long. When I feel like I'm in a bad mood, I just put it on and I just start laughing. So you're gonna have to look up John Krasinski on there. He does quite a very good impression of Tina Turner. So you will like that.
That would be great.
Yeah, you definitely have to look that up. So besides racing, you know, what else interests you? What do you like to do if you're not racing?
Well, I'm really into triathlon, and it has to do, it still ties in with racing a little bit because I train pretty hard to keep myself fit for these 500-mile races that we do, and it's really taxing on our bodies. So I like to stay fit through endurance sports. I swim and run and bike a lot. And I'm currently training to do a half Ironman in June. And so that's going to be really exciting. I'm really pumped about that. It's just it's a lot of work, and I put a lot of time in during the week for triathlon training.
That's fantastic. That is, my husband's actually going to be doing a mud run in a couple weeks. So he enjoys those as well. And it is very taxing. I mean, you better be fit in order to do those races or forget it. You're dumped. Well, I know we got you just only for a minute left because I know you've got another obligation at 8:00, but we want to thank you so very much for coming on. We want to wish you the best at Bristol. Now, you'll be driving in the Xfinity Series as well?
Yep, I'll be driving the number 01 car for City Motorsports on Saturday, and Sunday I'm driving the 40 for Hillman Racing, so I do double duty about every weekend, and it's a lot of fun.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Thank you so much. We hope you come back, and we wish you nothing but the best.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you very much.
That was Landon Castle. He's such a nice guy. What a sweetheart.
It's you know, I just feel sorry sometimes for Brandon Landon. You know, he's in the pits and people just walk right by him because he's so quiet and timid. You don't see, like, you know, him as like a, you know, like the flashy drivers, like everybody chases. Landon could walk right through the pits, mm-hmm. like point A to B real quick. But, you know,
right.
you know, but he's there. He's getting there. I mean, every year he's improving. He's getting better every year. He's taking advantage
right.
of running both series. And, you know, I give him a few more years, and he is going to be, like, one of the strong contenders.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree with you. And you know, it's funny because my middle son has always been the type of race fan where he will pick a driver that – you know, isn't one in the top 10, you know what I mean? And he'll pick that driver who's just now getting a ride in the Sprint Cup, and he will stick to that driver until they get popular, and then he dumps them, and then he moves on to the next one. And I love that about him, that he does that, because, you know, he thinks he just loves those up-and-comers, you know what I mean? And he loves to see how their career, you know, goes and flows, but once they become that, you know, up in that top 10 or whatever, he dumps them like crazy because he's like, okay, you don't need me anymore. So I'm just going to go and I'm gonna find another up-and-comer. And I think that's great. I love that he does that.
One thing about Landa, too, he's realistic behind the wheel. Like last week during a race, one of the drivers, you know, somebody was asking him before the race, I think it was Michael Waltrip when he was doing his walkthrough, and he was like, Landon, what do you expect this week? And he was like, you know, we feel like we have a top 20 car. Knowing, you know, that he is one of the lower budget teams, but he is working, you know, his way through. And he's being
right.
realistic. He's not coming out and saying, oh, I'm going to have a top five car. Knowing where he
right.
is, knowing the compared to some of the other teams, knowing what he can do with the car. He's not going to overdrive the car and put it into the wall where he has to come back with the team and work on everything. He's gonna, if he has a 20, within a 20 spot finish, he's going to finish in that race.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, and is the fact that he is realistic, but also that he's one of those drivers where you have no reason to not like him. You know what I mean? He's so sweet. He's so nice. You know, another thing I want to bring up as far as drivers who are a little bit in the hot seat. Well, I think they're in the hot seat, and that is that Dale Earnhardt Jr. said something about how it's a lot harder. Or a lot faster in the corners, you know, driving out of the corners with the way the race cars are set up this year. And you know what? I'm sorry. I don't care, Junior Nation, you know, really. I mean, you need to ask yourself, would you ever hear Dale Earnhardt Sr. say, oh, my gosh, we're going too fast? I'm sorry. That comment totally put me off. I know it wasn't just him saying it. I know Matt Kenseth said it as well, a couple of other drivers. But, I mean, since when does a race car driver say we're going too fast?
No. I mean, if Landon could do it at 3 years old, nobody's going fast. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
Doesn't make
exactly.
sense.
Exactly. It doesn't. I was totally taken back by that, and I was like, wow, Junior, you know, your dad hated restrictor plates. He made sure everybody knew how much he hated restrictor plates. And I understand that back then, you know, there wasn't social media. You know what I mean? So you didn't have what everybody said on Twitter or on Facebook or, you know, wherever in the matter of a few seconds. But, you know, so we don't really know what a lot of the drivers were thinking maybe 10 years ago on an instant. But, you know, I just stop whining, Junior. Just win a race and stop whining. There's nothing wrong with going too fast. I understand it's to the corner. And I understand that, you know, like even last week, I mean, you saw Harvick trying to catch up to Johnson. And, you know, there were a couple times where he lost time coming through those corners. But, I mean, he didn't wreck the car, you know, so he knows how to drive. We know that. But I don't see that as an issue going too fast. I mean, and I don't see it as a safety issue either. I really don't. I am so old school. It's not even funny. I don't even like the restrictor plates. I can't stand them. But we have some news that's coming up, don't we, Alan? We're going to be doing a New England tour.
Yes, we are. We're going to be hitting a lot of the New England tracks when you come, when you come up here, and Loudon being one of them, and obviously what Loudon brings the modifieds, and we could see
right.
Doug firsthand. Landon be there. John Hunter, our guest last week, will be at the track running with the trucks. So look forward to you coming up here and showing everybody you're the blonde, I'm the bombshell, and we can just go from there.
Exactly. I can't wait. The last time I was at Loudon, I believe Dale Jr. and Dale Sr. were racing in the same cup race. I think it was Nextel Cup back then. That's the last time I've been to Loudon. I mean, it's been a long time. I was living in Miami for 13 years, so that's why I'd go to Homestead rather than Loudon. But what are you looking forward to this week as far as Bristol? Do you think it's going to be the same thing as far as, all the other races? Harvick's going to be the car, the one to beat?
I miss Kyle Busch not being there because Kyle Busch did dominate Bristol for a while in both series.
Right. And so did his brother. His brother did as well.
Exactly. And his brother's starting to get his stride back, I think he's got something that he wants to prove to the fans. And, I don't rule Kurt Busch out at any race this year.
No, I don't either. And I would like to see him win. I'd also like to see Tony Stewart get out of whatever, I don't even know what to call it. I mean, he's in a slump, and I don't understand. You know what I mean? Danica Patrick has more points than he does. Wrong with that? Oh, Ellen, she gave us a little tidbit of information, and you being a magazine guy, I need to know, are you in the know? I mean, she told everybody basically, if Ricky asks, she will accept a marriage proposal. So come on, Mr. Magazine guy, are they already engaged?
I don't know. It's something, you rarely get to see the drivers. I mean, when I interview the drivers, it's always in their fire suits, and I never get to see them outside the track. What they do is they make it going. Once they bolt, and they go on their way. I mean, campers do pick up, seeing them here and there, but I wouldn't rule it out.
I mean, that was quite a little nugget of information right there. I mean, she put it out there on TV, kind of giving him some pressure. He better have been ring shopping this week.
maybe that's why I was trying to get Ricky, on for a future show, and his media people were like, oh, well, we got to, he's busy doing this and that. And you never know. I mean, with that little tidbit, he's either ring shopping or he wants to dodge that question all outright. But I do know we got a couple minutes left. I know we got a couple minutes left, but I just want to mention to the people listening that next week we have Liz Allison that's going to be on the show, and I'm really, really looking forward to having Liz on.
That's going to be fantastic. That's going to be our Throwback Thursday special with Liz Allison, of course, Davey's wife. And she'll also be talking about Robbie's upcoming career and how great he's doing. That's going to be fantastic. But we do want to thank, of course, Doug Kobe. And for all of you out there, you need to keep an eye on him. Also, the wonderful Landon Castle. We hope he comes back. And we do want you to come back next week for our Liz Allison special. I believe Jason Myers from Bowman Gray is also going to be on. Bowman. I keep remembering it's Bowman. My co-hosts make me, they yell at me when I get it wrong. So we want to thank Landon and, of course, thank Doug for coming on. And, next week is just going to be such a great show. I cannot wait. You, my dear, thank you so much for being my co-host, and we had a great 2 weeks, and more to come.
Yeah, it is. And I just want to say real quick before we sign off, on May 3rd, the Racing Times, we're having a blow-up party at the Pit Stop Cafe in Milford, Connecticut. And it's going to be the Talladega race is going to be on the TVs. We have drivers going to be coming down. John Hall is going to bring his motorcycle, his Pulsac motorcycle down. We have a legend car, a modified coming for fans to look at.
That's awesome.
And I just wanted to thank Jesse James and Alexis DeGiorio. They just sent me a Team Crew shirt signed by Jesse and Alexis and a Piston signed by both of them for our fundraiser. So I just want to invite anybody out there in the Milford, Connecticut area or basically New England area, if you want to come down, it's May 3rd, Bay in Milford, Connecticut. And it starts at noon.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We are on to next week. Checkered flag.